This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Michael Bitzer from Catawba College, sitting in for Mike Collins. We're halfway through the decennial counting of America's population, and some surprising statistics are confirming what a lot of us experience every day. Charlotte and North Carolina are booming. Last year, the United Nations produced a population estimate and projections for cities around the world. And in the United States, Charlotte and Raleigh stood out among American cities. Both the Queen City and the Capital City are projected to grow 71% each from 2010 to 2030. And the U.S. Census Bureau, using a different method, ranked Charlotte as the second fastest growing big city in the nation, just behind Fort Worth, Texas. Urban areas of the state see that booming growth every day. But what will be the impact of this growth going into the future, and can we sustain this pattern? Joining us today are four guests who make it their jobs to study this growth and who think about the impact it will have on our cities, regions, and the state. Two are joining us from the state's second largest city, Raleigh. Joining us from Chapel Hill are Dr. Rebecca Tippett, who is the Director of Carolina Demography at the Carolina Population Center at UNC Chapel Hill. Her areas of expertise include population estimates and forecast, migration, and indicators of economic well-being. Her forecast on population trends helped to determine the demand for new schools, and she regularly writes and presents about the impact of demographic and social trends in North Carolina. Good morning, Rebecca.
Good morning.
Dr. Thomas Ricketts is a professor of health policy and management and social medicine at UNC School of Global Public Health and the UNC School of Medicine. He was the founding director of the North Carolina Rural Health Research Center and is currently the deputy director of the Shep Center for Health Services Research at UNC Chapel Hill. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning.
And here in studio is Paul Hendershot, who is the Director of Research at the Charlotte Chamber of Commerce. In his current role, he authored publications examining the energy and healthcare clusters, along with the role of connectivity and what impact it has on economic development in Charlotte. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning.
And Jeff Michael is the director of the UNC Charlotte Urban Institute, an applied public policy research center serving the 14-county Charlotte region. A planner and attorney by training, Jeff's professional experience includes extensive work around land use, sustainable development, and land conservation issues. Good morning, Jeff.
Thank you, Mike.
If you want to join our conversation about the boom that our state and region are currently experiencing, send us an email to charlottetalks@wfae.org. You can also find us on Facebook or Twitter or on our website wfae.org. I want to first kind of start with some broad numbers. And Rebecca, you do this as your professional job. Give us a sense of some of the key demographic trends that are going on in the state, along with really the two largest urban areas, Charlotte and Raleigh.
All right. So being a demographer in North Carolina is very exciting because the state, as you've mentioned, is undergoing so many significant changes. One of the big things from a statewide perspective is that the state is growing. We probably just passed the 10 million mark sometime earlier this year. We're on track to add about a million new residents between 2010 and 2020. The same time, that's really being driven by these two major urban areas. Between 2010 and 2013, the 12 counties that comprised the Triangle and Charlotte metropolitan regions accounted for two-thirds of the state's growth. So at the same time that the state is growing, we're seeing an increasing divide between urban and rural. So Wake and Mecklenburg both passed the 1 million population mark in 2014, but we have one in two counties that have probably lost population since 2010. So some really interesting patterns emerging and definitely big changes across the state, just sometimes different changes.
Jeff, what do we see with Charlotte here in particularly to kind of add on to what Rebecca talked about?
Well, a very similar pattern. I think we're seeing robust growth clearly here in Charlotte itself, mm-hmm. and particularly Center Charlotte and some of the hot spots such as the Ballantyne's Lancaster Panhandle area in northern South Carolina, also North Mech. But even in the Charlotte region, Rebecca mentioned some of those counties that are losing population. Rowan County, Anson yeah. County, I mean, there are at least three or four of our 14 counties that we study and track who are also losing population. So it's definitely a divide. There's definitely, I think, this economic recovery we're all seeing is taking place in urban areas.
Okay. We're going to get more into that urban-rural divide. Paul, how do you see this playing out?
Well, definitely jobs are responsible for quite a bit of this growth, as we are a very attractive place to move to. And just over the last year, we, from 2013 to 2014, we added about 20,000 jobs in Mecklenburg County. We just crossed over 700,000 employees. And that accounts for 58% of the job growth in the metropolitan area and about 18% of the percent of the job growth in the state. So again, we're seeing a bit of that rural-urban bias taking place, and also that tremendous job growth basically outpacing many of our peer metropolitan areas. And our job growth at that 2.9% is outpacing both North Carolina and the rest of the United States.
Besides jobs, do we know why people are moving here? Do we have a sense of what is attracting these folks to come? Rebecca, you want to chime in?
Sure. There's a couple major reasons why people move, and I think all of those are at play in North Carolina. First, one of the big reasons why people move is to go to school, and we have so many good schools and universities in the state, so you see people coming from across the country and the world to come to school to North Carolina. We also have multiple major military installations, which pull people in here at the beginning of their working lives. Combine that with the fact that not only are Raleigh and Charlotte major metropolitan areas, but we have multiple other smaller metros that are also growing and have kind of robust opportunities for different types of lifestyle. So you can choose the mountains or the coast, and also different industry mixes. So we have a really wide array of places and jobs for people to choose from, combined with a relatively low cost of living and pretty good weather. So all those things work together to pull people here. And one of the newest things that we've seen is that North Carolina has also emerged in the past decade as a retiree destination. And I think that's going to continue to impact the state's population growth through 2030.
Okay. Paul?
I believe both cost of living and cost of doing business are major factors why people relocate. For example, the Wells Fargo has a housing affordability index. And Charlotte, basically looking at median household income and median home prices, roughly over 55% of the homes in Charlotte are considered affordable compared to other major metropolitan areas like New York on the other side of the spectrum. That number drops to roughly 10%, or Los Angeles. So that affordability, and also we have just a great the total package of growth, climate, and just it's one of a very positive place to be.
Yeah, I think you also have to remember the fundamentals, and that is people come where jobs are. And you look at a place like the Triangle, where there have been decades of investment in the tech industry, and that's certainly a growth area economically, and that's attracting jobs. But even a place like Charlotte, where perhaps the banking industry has plateaued in terms of job growth from where it was, you know, a decade or so ago, nonetheless, there were other investments, including the investment in the airport, that continues to make this a great place to do business.
So we've got a lot to offer for folks to come here, and we're obviously attracting those folks with all these components. The effect, the impact, is going to be certainly wide felt across a number of different kind of policy areas, if you want to kind of differentiate them. Tom, how is this growth, particularly in urban areas but across the state, how is that going to affect health care as one of the main concerns of policy issues about this?
Well, health care in North Carolina is very interesting because we took the lead in creating some very specialized healthcare centers around Durham, Chapel Hill, Charlotte, Greensboro, and out in Greenville when the East Carolina school started. So those centers of specialty medicine attract both physicians to work in them, but also patients from the region and beyond the state's borders. And they serve as something of a technology pole, because you have to have a lot of support services and high technology structures to support that kind of healthcare delivery. So those have been poles of attraction that have brought people in and really helps the employment situation. But they also reflect kind of the problem of the rural-urban divide, because we do have these high-tech centers and places where we can get very complex health care, and the regions around those places reflect really the good health indicators that reflect really some of the that compare very well with the rest of the United States. But we have this other parts of the state, especially eastern North Carolina, where we're still bogged down with healthcare or health status indicators that really make us look like we're living in the past. So we've got this kind of two North Carolinas that we have to work with here. And I think that we've spent some time and some effort trying to bring access to care out into the rural areas, but we still haven't seen the health status indicators improve as much as we wanted to.
Beyond healthcare, and while we're going to be focusing most of this on urban areas, everybody has pretty much brought up this divide. we've heard about it in the news, particularly with legislative action about the urban-rural divide that's going on within the General Assembly. Rebecca, from the rural perspective, beyond just the issues of healthcare, what else are major concerns in that part of the state that really folks who live in urban areas have no real understanding or interaction with?
I think that's a really hard question. As an urban area resident myself, I think there's a couple big things, and they come back to a lot of the stuff that we've already touched on. One is the issue of jobs. And increasingly, I think the Great Recession may have made it harder for people to move for jobs. So combined with job losses in areas and increasing commutes, you're seeing some tensions there about kind of youth drain. So people are leaving. They may be staying a little bit longer, staying and going to school regionally, but then they're often leaving for the urban areas, which means that when we talk about population aging in those areas, it's really a serious impact because you often have an older, less healthy population, kind of speaking to the indicators that Tom was talking about, the same time that the most able-bodied, often the kind of the tax base has left, and they've left to the urban areas, often within the state, for educational and employment opportunities. So that's kind of an issue of aging in place. And in addition to kind of population demography, you have this issue of housing demography. So what happens with vacant housing or, vacant factories and things that get left behind as population and business leave an area? And I think those are very challenging questions and have very different answers than some of the issues of growth that also have challenges, but from a very different angle.
Jeff.
Yeah, we talk a lot about the urban-rural divide, but in many ways, for myself, when we look at these public policy issues and the complexities surrounding them, I think we do ourselves a disservice only thinking of it as an urban-rural divide, because I think there's an urban-suburban-rural divide. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Much of the growth is taking place in these suburban areas, and many of people living there are not native-born, just as many of the people living in the urban areas are not native-born, but they oftentimes view these issues very differently. And so as we as a state begin to try to wrestle with these issues, whether it's housing, transportation, I think we have to understand it in those three spheres.
Okay. We're going to come back, and specifically in the next segment, we're going to talk about that suburban aspect, how are suburbs playing in the mix of all this. That was Jeff Michael with UNC Charlotte's Urban Institute. We've also got Paul Hendershot from the Chamber of Commerce here in Charlotte, Rebecca Tibbett from UNC's Carolina Population Center, and Tom Ricketts with UNC's Center for Health Research. We'll be right back.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Charlotte Ballet, presenting Jean-Pierre Bonfou's Peter Pan. Escape to Neverland with this high-flying ballet set to the music of Rossini and featuring grand sets and costumes, March 12th through the 22nd at Knight Theater. Tickets and information at charlotteballet.org. Coming up tomorrow on Charlotte Talks, my how you talk. And when you do, you have an accent. We all have them. That said, we hope you can gather around and sit a spell as we chew the fat about how North Carolinians talk. Two NC State professors who study language in its social context will tell us how upbringing, geography, socioeconomic status, and other factors influence speech. The authors of Talkin' Tar Heel, When Charlotte Talks, tomorrow at 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, a Justice Department investigation finds a pattern of racial discrimination by police officers and courts in Ferguson, Missouri. What's in that new report? How it could affect police departments nationwide.
Join the conversation on The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-supported 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Michael Bitzer from Catawba College sitting in for Mike Collins. We're talking about the population boom in North Carolina and in the various regions of our state and the future impact on politics, business, healthcare, and infrastructure, just to name a few areas. With us from Chapel Hill is Dr. Tom Ricketts with the UNC's Center for Health Services Research and Dr. Rebecca Tippett from UNC's Carolina Population Center. In studio is Jeff Michael from UNC Charlotte's Urban Institute and Paul Hendershot with the Charlotte Chamber of Commerce. As Charlotte grows, what are your concerns about the Queen City as well as for our state? You can join our discussion. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, or send us an email to charlottetalks@wfae.org. Before the break, we were talking about the urban-rural divide, but there is this important component kind of lying between the two, and that is suburbia. What are we seeing in terms of the growth in suburban counties, and what kind of relationship do they have between rural counties and the urban kind of core center, Jeff?
Well, it's complex. I mean, different suburbs look different from one another. Certainly, you have pockets of affluence where a lot of people are choosing to live in these suburbs and then commuting into jobs in places like Charlotte. But in other places, as the urban areas become more expensive to live, you see the middle class moving further and further out as well. So they're not homogenous. I think another trend we've seen here in Charlotte, and I suspect you're seeing it in the Triangle as well, is the emergence of suburbs not just as bedroom communities, residential enclaves, but also as employment centers in their own right. So, for example, here in the Charlotte region, the North Mecklenburg area around Davidson, Cornelius, and Mooresville, you have Lowe's corporate headquarters, other businesses beginning to locate there. Likewise, in the Ballantyne area and the Lancaster Panhandle area in upstate South Carolina, also being a place where a lot of jobs are locating.
Okay.
And I'd also like just to add a bit on the urban core, and that really is one of the most dynamic areas in our region. You have, when you look at the 25 to 34-year-old with a college degree, that key demographic in economic development, we have roughly in our uptown area, 38.7 of the residents have a college or have a 4-year degree. And our city center over the last 5 years has grown by roughly 70%. And these are very, I guess you could say, high-income, affluent folks. The average income in Uptown is $64,000 compared to the rest of the county at $52,000. And there's been a 249% increase in the number of housing units since 2004, and another 11,000 either announced or under construction. And we're also seeing, as a result, an increase in the arts and entertainment employment by 129% over the last decade. And we're seeing this kind of this activity in that urban core that's really solidifying Charlotte as a destination city. For example, our hotel, average hotel rate has just passed an average of $100 per room night for the first time since the Democratic National Convention. Okay. So we're seeing a lot of activity in the urban core.
Rebecca, are we seeing similar activity across the state in major urban cores in the Triangle, the Triad, other areas?
Definitely. I think what Jeff said about kind of the emergence of initial bedroom communities transitioning into vibrant hubs of their own is true in the Triangle. We've seen that in the past few decades with Cary. Cary was actually one of the fastest growing small cities or towns, or not small, large, 100,000 plus in the state since 2010. One of the things that we have been seeing with this revitalization of urban areas that's happening both within the state and at a national scale has been this kind of suburbanization of poverty. So we're seeing kind of a change in what cities look like. It used to be this thriving suburb around a more, I guess, an economically stunted urban core often. And we're seeing now kind of a vibrant downtown core consistent sometimes with what we might call gentrification, poverty and some of these other issues that are difficult to address and create challenges for an area are pushed out into kind of the older inner ring suburbs sometimes, and then you have a more vibrant exurban community. So it's something that a colleague of mine in Virginia calls the new donut model of the city, and he's done some work with Charlotte actually that shows exactly some of these indicators, a massive increase in kind of affluent, high achieving, you know, households in the urban area, and then some declining median incomes followed by a bump out the further you get from the city center. So, you know, you're seeing a shift in where and how people are living, which is going to change some of the traditional challenges for these urban areas.
Tom, are we seeing that play out in healthcare and healthcare delivery? Are we seeing this kind of change going on, not just in the urban areas, but in the suburbs as well?
Yes, we've have an interesting structure in the way we set up our healthcare system in North Carolina, with some very strong systems. In Charlotte, you have both Novant and Carolina's Medical Center there, but they also they've been able to either acquire or construct or developed peripheral hospitals that are becoming centers in and of themselves. UNC and Duke are following suit by either acquiring or merging with other hospitals across the state. So we're having, we're setting up these strong regional systems that are able to, let's say, exploit the growth of the suburbs by having facilities located where the population is growing. This is an interesting process. It's not the same in every other state, simply because we've had these very large tertiary care centers that have been able to, if not dominate the market, they've been able to really direct it.
I was going to ask, is that going to be beneficial for the future growth that we're projected to see, or is that could that create even further disparity?
Well, it's reaching some of this growth is actually benefiting the rural places. Carolinas, for example, became affiliated with the hospital out in Anson County and really helped almost save that hospital, and has helped that more or less rural area really become stronger. So there have been benefits, but that's kind of the near rural. It does create a steeper cliff between the very rural, say, mid-eastern band of counties that really don't have this kind of growth. But it is happening to some degree. UNC invested heavily in the hospital out in Siler City in Chatham County, built a new facility, and that is really becoming something of a hub itself in helping that small and rural community grow rather well.
Okay.
But we still have that problem in the eastern counties that we don't have the population or the proximity to support a system.
Okay. Paul?
And I would like to just add, you know, the famous adage, demographics is destiny. And really, you know, healthcare translates that very well. During the economic downturn, healthcare was one of the stabilizing forces in our economy, as financial services shed between 2008 and 2010 roughly 6,000 jobs. Healthcare was actually adding jobs, and these are high-paying jobs, and they actually have served as a catalyst for growth in other industries as well. So I just want to add the role of healthcare in the region.
Okay. Healthcare isn't just the only issue that we're confronting. In response to our question about Charlotte's growth and the state's growth, Liz on Twitter says that congestion and traffic, especially on Harris, Providence, and other secondary roads, I guess the question of infrastructure, yes. How are we going to be able to handle the demands of this projected growth to 2030 of potentially another 70% more growth in Charlotte and in Raleigh? How is our basic infrastructure? How are the roads? How is water? How is, you know, just all kinds of just basic daily needs that the citizens are going to rely on? How is that going to be able to be handled?
Well,
Jeff?
I think that's the big question, because there's a price tag with all of those things.
Does the growth pay for itself, or is it an extra burden on what folks are already having to support in terms of taxes, policies, those kinds of things?
Yeah, and I'm not an expert in that field, but most of the national studies that I've seen indicate that indeed, growth does not necessarily pay for those services without an accompanying increase in revenue somewhere. And so many of our communities are challenged with that. We have a lot of growth in unincorporated areas as well. And so the question there is, how do you provide these services to areas where people have moved there in part because of lower taxes and not being part of a municipality, and yet at the same time are demanding those services?
Rebecca, how do you see this issue of paying for this growth as we move forward?
Like Jeff, that's not necessarily my area of expertise, okay. But I think one of the big issues that this raises is the importance of a regional approach. This is not a single county, single municipality thing, because most often people are living, working, and playing within a region, not within a distinct incorporated place or unincorporated place. Like Jeff mentioned, people might be moving to an unincorporated place, but they're working in the city. Their kids might be going to a school district that serves multiple places. I think there are additional challenges that are brought about, not just on roads, but in infrastructure like broadband to maintain competitiveness and kind of educational attainment. Mm-hmm. And we also have this issue that demographics and household formation can put additional strains on infrastructure that may not be easily anticipated. So,
how so?
If you have so if more people are living alone at older ages, you have an increased demand for housing units. If people are less likely to get married or more likely to get divorced, instead of, you know, you have more housing units with fewer people in them, and each housing unit has to have roads and water lines and other things to connect it. So you can see housing units go up, even if population stays somewhat the same, if we have shifts in household formation or, you know, people living longer and living alone, as we've seen arise at the national level. So those are some things to keep in mind, that population alone has some other aspects that can change that can also put demands on infrastructure.
So are politicians, are the policymakers getting ready to respond to this? Are they developing the initiatives now to plan for this kind of growth? Or is it going to be a kind of reactive action? Paul?
Well, I believe it's a combination of both. I mean, we are responding. If you look at the efforts with the public-private partnerships, for example, to expand I-77 is a great example. The bottom line is the Federal Highway Trust Fund is essentially insolvent, and we have increased demands on our infrastructure. One of the key aspects of our transportation infrastructure we haven't discussed is air. Charlotte is now the second largest hub to the world's largest airline. Our passenger traffic has been steadily increasing by about 2% every year. And that really provides the infrastructure and the connectivity to compete globally. And that is truly essential to foster economic development. A few fun facts I pulled together. Over the last 5 years, one of the fastest growing occupations is aviation and the airline industry, at growing by 70%. When we look at a location quotient, essentially a benchmark compared to the rest of the United States, of the concentration of industries, of occupations, Charlotte has five times the airline stewardesses than the rest of the country. So there's a few facts, okay. And that is definitely an important aspect of our transportation infrastructure.
Okay, Jeff.
So Michael, you asked if policymakers, elected officials, are addressing these issues, and I know here in the Charlotte region, we just for the last 3 years went through part of a regional initiative called Connect, and the local councils of government were a part of that to bring local governments, other types of NGOs and agencies together to talk about Charlotte's growth and develop a preferred scenario of how that growth might take place, but leaving the decision-making at the local level. I can also say, and my guess is many of us have had this experience over the last year, that our elected officials and policymakers are reaching out to us for data and information to better understand this. We just got a request about 6 months ago from the governor's office to better understand some of the economic and demographic changes that are taking place here in North Carolina as they're trying to plan for that. Now, what their strategies are, I can't say, and that's where, sort of the debates take place in terms of people's differing opinions about how you address these issues. But I do believe our policymakers are paying attention.
Okay.
And one more point.
Oh,
this is not unique to to Charlotte per se. I know Baltimore is now has they have 150-year-old infrastructure, sewers. Mm-hmm. They're almost essentially putting a moratorium on all new construction. Same thing. This also occurring in some of the smaller suburbs. For example, Grovetown outside of Augusta is now suspended housing construction because their infrastructure just can't seem to keep up, particularly sewers. So this is any high growth area, whether it's Phoenix, Dallas, Charlotte, Atlanta is dealing with these issues. So it's not unique to Charlotte.
Okay. Dennis emailed in saying, you mentioned a retirement destination in your opening. I'm a senior living in the Lake Norman area. Many of the immigrant seniors I know are here because their children got jobs here and they retire here to be near their kids and grandkids. How big an impact do you think this has on growth in the retiree population of the region? Rebecca, you want to tackle that one?
Yeah, I think that it definitely has an impact. It's very difficult to actually quantify that impact, largely because unlike there's kind of three big demographic factors that most you can think about: fertility, mortality, and migration. And births and deaths are very well documented, or we hope that they're very well documented events. Migration is what we'd call an undocumented event. You don't have to file anything official when you move houses. So we can try to understand why people might be moving. And one of the things that we do see is that particularly in areas like Mecklenburg and Wake, we see a pretty significant uptick in net migration in the population 75 plus. And one of the reasons that we think that's happening is in part medical migration. People are moving to be close to high quality medical facilities. But another may be that they're moving to be close to children who are there, take care of grandchildren as well as be taken care of as they age. Kind of by their children who are currently working in one of those counties.
Tom, if we have all these retirees moving in, they're going to be calling on the healthcare system. Do we have enough medical professionals in these areas to sustain this kind of a growth?
In the urban places and most suburban places, we certainly do. North Carolina has had growth in its physician supply, and as we talked about hospitals before, they're growing very rapidly. But what we also have are these life care centers that are appearing across the state. And they are communities where supportive services and healthcare services are concentrated around the resident patient. And these are older folks who are retiring to these places where they can transition from an independent living into an assisted living setting. But then again, out in the rural places, these types of continuous care communities don't exist. So, and that's partly because there's not enough of the workforce there to support them, as well as really the income that would support that kind of complex structure. So, again, we're stuck with two North Carolinas, but we're slowly growing out into the rural places, and we have developed a. We have an Office of Rural Health that supports that kind of work. And,
Okay, that's Tom Ricketts from UNC's Center for Health Services Research. This is Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE. I'm Michael Bitzer. We'll be back in just a moment.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Mecklenburg County Solid Waste. The SWAT a Litter Bug program enables the public to report littering, 95% of which is cigarette butts thrown from cars. Details at swataliterbug.com. Coming up next at 10 o'clock, in about 20 minutes on the Diane Rehm Show, a Justice Department investigation finds a pattern of racial discrimination by police officers and courts in Ferguson, Missouri. Diane Rehm and a panel of guests will discuss what's in the new report and how it could affect police departments nationwide. That discussion on the Diane Rehm Show at 10 in about 20 minutes here on 90.7 WFAE. If you'd like to join today's conversation, email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter. We're coming right back.
Thank you. For many years, I was the proud owner of a 1974 Dodge Dart. I'm Susan Stamberg. My son called it the clunker. I always took offense at that, but I ran a carpool in the morning, took the children in the neighborhood over to school, and then went on to NPR. That Dart was big, it was brown, and it never let me down. Imagine turning that car into my favorite programs.
Donate your car and get a tax deduction. Visit WFAE.org for details.
It's Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, 90.3 WFHE. I'm Michael Bitzer from Catawba College, sitting in for Mike Collins, and we're talking about the boom in population and its effects, not just on the state, but on regions and areas such as Charlotte. We've got a Facebook comment from the Huntersville mayor, Jill Swan. As a mayor and chair of the Metro Mayors Coalition, I think we need to do away with the phrase urban-rural divide and instead talk about, quote, an economic success vision, unquote, for our entire state. We are all inextricably tied to each other and dependent on each other. Let's kind of pick up on that theme. I think because we're talking about a lot of times regionalism. Are we going to have to rethink this notion of distinct counties, distinct cities? You know, you're in your area, I'm in mine, even though our populations are butting up against one another. Are we going to have to rethink this notion of how we have structured services like education, like transportation, like water, sewer, perhaps internet service, those kinds of things? Are we going to have to start rethinking this process?
I think so, and I think it begins with a shared understanding of one another. You know, one of the things, I grew up in a small town in North Carolina, a rural part of the state, and live in one of the suburbs in North Mecklenburg County, but then work here in Charlotte. And I think that gives me a unique perspective of how people think. And in many ways, we share that vision of a better place for our children to live. And yet, there are so many things that divide us. And it amazes me how few of us take the time to get to understand our neighbors, whether our neighbors in the suburbs and the rural areas. I don't know what the solution to begin to foster that kind of understanding, but I agree with the mayor that we have to begin, and it has to be with a positive vision about what we can be if we're working together.
Is it kind of a territorial turf war that's holding this opportunity back, or is it something else deeper?
I don't know the answer, but it does feel at times like it's a zero-sum game, okay, or that at least people believe that we make decisions about resource allocation based on the zero-sum game instead of understanding that there could be a strategy of growth that lifts all boats. You know the old saying, a rising tide lifts all boats.
Okay. Paul?
And you know, just to add to that point, in the economic development world, we are competing regionally. I mean, you know, people when a company's looking to relocate, they first look at the Charlotte metropolitan statistical area. They're not just looking at, you know, an individual city or an individual county. They look at the sum of all our parts. And that's really where our strength is, and that's who we're competing with. We're not competing with the city of Dallas, per se, or the city of San Diego. We're competing with their metropolitan areas as well. And we are working collaboratively with our neighboring counties, because we understand that that truly is our strength, is that cooperation.
Tom, do you see that kind of playing out? You had talked earlier about the notion of healthcare and the extension from urban areas out into rural areas. Are we seeing perhaps the beginnings of that kind of cooperative sense of at least delivering healthcare and perhaps extend that to other services of infrastructure needs?
Well, yes, we do. We have a sense of regionalism in healthcare and public health in North Carolina. We have we did regionalize the state both for public health services, but also for curative health services in our AHEC regions. And those are nine regions across the state with centers that help with train professionals as well as support services. But unfortunately, we haven't had that really a parallel in economic development or even in education. It's nice that North Carolina has 100 counties because you can do division really easily and come up with percentages. But unfortunately, they work against some of this because each county has a strong – we have a fairly relatively strong county system. And if we have individual, say, public health departments and some distributed responsibilities in that area, people tend to want to create boundaries and borders. In regional development, we used to have regional planning centers, but we've gotten rid of those. And we really do need to this cross-county boundary cooperation to work a little bit better. I worked with a very rural public health department trying to connect to an adjacent, more urban health department, and it took years, many years, to really bring down the barriers of both pride and structural differences that county boundary, of which thousands of people crossed every day, but you couldn't get a piece of paper or an email message across the boundary very easily because of the kind of the bureaucracy and the structure. So we might have to think about our county structure in a different way. Healthcare is doing that to some degree by reaching out and coordinating its structures, but we still have problems across many county boundaries. So I think the mayor is right. Regional solutions are it, because there's an old saying in community health that the local problem might not have a local solution. We need to reach out for the solutions, and the people in places that have solutions have to look for those places where they can help.
Okay, another issue that is certainly driving a lot of conversations and questions about this kind of regionalism approach is environmental concerns. We've got two comments, David, on Facebook. At some point, we need to demarket our fine city and region like California to preserve our quality of life, attract stewards, not polluters. Frackers are polluters. Mirandy on Twitter, in response to our question about what listeners are looking forward to with Charlotte's growth, light rail expansion, and more enviro-friendly development, e.g. stop clear-cutting trees. What's going to be the role of environmental concerns with this projected growth that the state and regions are going to be experiencing?
Well, Jeff. Could I put on my public health hat on that?
Sure. Tom, go ahead.
We've emphasized water resources over at the School of Public Health and across the state, nation, and really the globe to some degree. But North Carolina is a very water-sensitive state. We're almost like a hill where all the water flows away from it, north through Asheville, and then south through Charlotte, and to the east, the rest of the state. And we'd be very sensitive to a long-standing drought. And we're also very sensitive to the problem of cleaning the water that we're going to use downstream. We're not necessarily preparing for that type of a stressed situation like California is experiencing right now with a very deep and long-standing drought. But we're very sensitive in North Carolina, and if we can a drought here can appear very quickly because of low flow and we're depending a lot upon really rainwater to replenish things. And if we don't get that kind of rainwater, we're in trouble. So we've created reservoirs, a private one there in Lake Norman. But then around the triangle, we have a Corps of Engineers lake that we're going to stress pretty soon with this water. Now, this might bring up some response on the fracking side because it takes a lot of water to do that kind of exploitation. And we have to really plan for this type of water use as well as the consequences of that water use in dirty water. So we've been lucky lately over the last few decades, but we really have to recognize that this is a very sensitive issue that relates to both growth as well as the health of the population we have right now.
Okay. A couple more comments. Aaron on Twitter, public transit. We need more options. Eric on Twitter, traffic, road quality. South Boulevard is a disaster. Both traffic and road is falling apart already. Expand retail uptown too. Rebecca, what do we see in terms of the issues from your point of view about studying demography, about infrastructure needs and the concerns about roads, bridges, education, those kinds of things?
I think that there's big challenges there because obviously there's a serious time lag in kind of how quickly you can address these things. You can't just say, okay, we know we need a road, and then the next month the road is built. So a lot of times you can see that you're coming to a pinch point, but it's going to take years, if not decades, to appropriately address it. And then sometimes the population might not be there when you're done. In these urban areas, that's unlikely to be the case. But I think in the Triangle and in Charlotte, you know, there's kind of this debate about can you develop some of these public transit things in such a low density area compared to a place like New York. So I think that there are some challenges for developing these issues in the South in particular, where you have a lower density population base, as well as even if you develop it, you still have to make it something that people can use. So just because buses are there, if it's still more cost effective for me personally to get in my car and drive to work, even if I'm sitting in traffic, it might be easier than getting on the bus or on the light rail. So I think there are a lot of challenges in terms of coordinating local transportation infrastructure with where people are living and where they're going.
Okay, Jeff.
Yeah, and I'd like to tie those two together,
okay,
the environment and transit, in the sense that we talked earlier about the growth since the recovery or since the recession being focused on the urban areas. Well, what's driving a lot of that is the younger talent, what many people refer to as the millennials and their lifestyle choices. And you can think about the environment and transit infrastructure in terms of an economic incentive as well. To continue to invest in these things, this younger generation, the millennial generation, they're looking for places that care about the environment. They're looking for places that have good transit access. And places that continue to invest in those and understand that, I think, are going to be the winners in this competitive global marketplace for talent. And I think many leaders are beginning to understand that, whatever their ideology is around these various issues mm-hmm. that typically divide us, I think people are beginning to understand that there is an economic imperative that we care about those two issues.
Paul, are Charlotte leaders or Charlotte policymakers going to have to address this issue?
Well, they are addressing the issue. For example, the Charlotte Chamber has a Healthy Charlotte initiative where we basically examine the American Fitness Index and we said, okay, what specific areas can Charlotte improve to improve our quality of life or the health of our citizens? And we ended up moving up the ranks by about, I think it was 10, don't quote me on that, but about 10 ranks in that index. And regarding the retail in Uptown, retail typically follows rooftops. And when we're experiencing this growth in Uptown, the retail will follow. You know, I know Center City Partners is working hard to attract the retail in Uptown, and it is coming along. I mean, you have to remember, downtown Charlotte has grown, you know, by leaps and bounds over the last decade. I mean, many of the people don't remember where it was 20, 30 years ago. So it's a new city, and these growing pains are taking place a little bit.
Is that going to play out politically? I mean, it is very much, it seems like major urban areas are becoming more and more democratically aligned. The suburbs are kind of maybe battleground areas. The rural areas tend to be much more Republican in voting behavior. Are we going to see that play a role in this discussion about how fast and how we deal with this kind of growth that the state and regions are dealing with?
Well, I think the best solution would just to keep politics out of it in some regards.
Can you do that?
and look at North Carolina as a whole, and you know, and try to remove these divides. I mean, rural areas have not lost jobs due to anything they may have done specifically. The fact of the matter is, agricultural employment is declined in the United States. Now less than 2% mm-hmm. of the total employment. Many of, you know, those the heartland is experiencing, rural Texas is experiencing it. So this is not just a North Carolina phenomenon. This is something that's taking place not only across the United States, but around the world. I mean, we've become an increasingly urbanized society. And I think the key to rural economic development is to focus on areas they have a unique competitive advantage in, whether it's their ecosystem, the pristine wildlife that mm-hmm. you know may be untapped, other avenues may be possibly looking at regional healthcare, regional shopping centers to really solidify their growth. I mean, that's really that. You know, let the rural areas be rural. I think don't compete with the urban areas.
Okay. Rebecca, how do you see the political dynamics playing out with this growth going into the future?
I mean, there's kind of the, I like to look at the political dynamics in terms of what's going to happen. I pay less. So we do know that kind of a balance of power is going to shift to urban areas in the sense that after 2020, they're likely to pick up more representation in the state house. At the same time, I think it might be a little bit premature to say that we really know how these demographic trends are going to impact voting behavior. We don't know how Hispanic, you know, the children of Hispanic immigrants are necessarily going to vote. And they aren't really going to have a huge impact on the North Carolina electorate until past 2020. Millennials are a bit of a wild card. There's a lot of independent voters, but how they split partisanly is still up for debate. And I think the research is just really beginning on that. At the same time, I think people tend to vote for people who do things that they like, right? So particularly in North Carolina, I want to go back to some of this rural-urban thing because even though I do think that it's important to remember that these things work in tandem, that a strong urban is often contingent on a strong rural and they both strengthen each other. So I see this as I'd love to move past some of the splits that we see kind of reported again and again, because really, as I think all of us have mentioned, this is really about strengthening everybody together because these changes impact the state as a whole. And I think that's important to keep in mind.
Okay. We will have to leave it there. That was Dr. Rebecca Tippett with UNC's Carolina Population Center joining us from Chapel Hill. Also joining us from Chapel Hill was Dr. Tom Ricketts from UNC's Center for Health Services Research. Also here in studio is Jeff Michael with UNC Charlotte's Urban Institute and Paul Hendershot with the Charlotte Chamber of Commerce. A lot of topics on this issue. Thank you all for the hour. This has been Charlotte Talks.